CHP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, my friends. It is that time once again to go off course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can follow me on social if you haven't already. I'm on Twitter at CanadanGolf. We're also on Twitter at OffCourseTHP, although I'll openly admit I talk a lot more on my personal account. With me today, and he was super gracious to give me an extra week so I could rant last week about what happened, was none other than Danny Lee, the brilliant mind over there at UST Mamiya. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny_T_Lee, although I did try and do a little research on you, and it looks like you're not a huge Twitter guy, which is kind of a bummer. Anyways, Danny, welcome. I'm super happy to have you on the show today. How are you, my friend?
Great. How you doing, bud? And, you know, I'll try to change that, you know, with the Twitter stuff, but just busy with my three little girls and wife at home. So keeps me kind of busy.
Yeah, I noticed if you look at your timeline, it is like 100% family. And I dig that, man. Good for you. They must they must love Papa Lee.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. So always try to incorporate a little golf stuff in there every now and then. I need to do more for sure. So moving forward, that's one of my goals for this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have all kinds of stuff I want to talk to you about today. But being that you're not showcasing this information on social, I'm just going to force it out on you right now. Having seen you at all these THP events, you do some awesome stuff with us, getting guys hooked up with great products, getting them fit for them. One of my favorite things to see, and even though it's not really company specific, is what shoes you're rocking at the time. I remember some high top Pumas in play. I remember all kinds of stuff. What is currently the shoe for Danny Lee?
I got about probably 10 pairs at home right now. So it just depends on the weather. Like if it's muddy out, it's going to be an old pair of Adidas 360 that I could just kind of beat up. If it's nice out, if it's decent, some Jordan 11s. I got a couple pair of those, some old Jordans, ADG, and some other Adidas stuff too as well, some the Code Chaos. So there's a variety of different colors, Pumas, got a lot of Pumas too as well. Got an assortment of stuff that I can go through. I got more coming. So that's one of the things that I like, is just being able to kind of be different there from a shoe standpoint.
So are you a limited edition guy, or are you simple stock?
Everything. Everything's fair game. It's just depends. Okay. Like I'm looking at some baseball shoes right now that I can use, turf shoes.
Okay.
That are kind of cool. You know, like it's different. I want something different in the golf space, right? You know, that's the one thing that we go to golf course. I do these THP events, and it's always a blast meeting these guys from across the country and just talking about golf, talking about life, and just being different. Right. So, that's one way to showcase it, just having different styles and, you know, whether it's shoes, whether it's joggers, whether it's the Arnold Palmer collection that's coming out. Right. So it's kind of unique. Everyone has their own style. So, you know, that's great for golf.
Yes, sir. I believe it. And you know, it's interesting. You've done so many of these now, and we're obviously incredibly grateful that you'd spend the time to do that. You mentioned the golf. You mentioned the people, THPers. You didn't say anything about playing golf with JB. And I don't know if that's like an oversight because it's just a regular thing, or you're like, you know, I guess he can come along if he has to. What's the story there? You got to have a pretty good rivalry going right now with JB.
No, it's good. I mean, we have fun on the golf course. That's the main thing. There's no, you know, we try to beat each other, try to beat the competitors. But at the end of the day, it's just all about having fun, you know, showcasing the product, showcasing US Team EMEA, showcasing THP. So the main thing is just having fun. And typically when we get together, we have a blast, whether it's, you know, going out to a nice dinner, you know, just talking about the industry, you know, just catching up, you know, talking about barbecue and stuff like that. I mean, that's what's so special about these events. And then, you know, having the members hear it, talk it, digest it, and, you know, disseminate that information on the forum.
Yeah. So I'm not upset in the fact that the last time we hung out, I came to you and I didn't get to play golf despite watching all these, you know, great courses get played all over the forum over the last couple of years. That's fine. We don't need to drag that out too long, even though I might come back to it a little later in the show. My question, my follow-up to that is, of all the courses you've done at a THP event, what was the one that really stood out to you? And that's a tough one because you guys have played some sweet courses.
Yeah, I try to do that on purpose because that gives me the opportunity to play some sweet courses. You know, there are, I think, you know, the first event we did at Hammock Beach, and the first day we played, and it was blown probably 30 to 40 miles per hour cold. I think that was kind of cool because it was, you know, unique, and being able to play the course and the guys enjoying it, you know, that was kind of one of the things that stuck with me in terms of, you know, then the next day we played and it was beautiful. So we had both ends of the spectrum in Florida. So that was kind of neat. You know, obviously we played some PGA Tour caliber courses, you know, where it's Olympia Fields, Belle Reve Country Club, you know, those are pretty special too. But those, you know, like Olympia is a special place, but the golf course is amazingly difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm all for having a golf course that's extremely playable, fun. So, you know, I think, you know, Hammock Beach, it kind of fits both of those where it's playable, it's fun, but it's a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to have trouble, you go down there, you play the conservatory from the tips, and that's where it gets really sketchy. Eh?
Yeah. No, thank you.
What is that? Like 75, 70 something hundred.
Yeah, it was like 77, 78, I think. It was
beefy.
Pretty deep. I mean, we played probably 65, and even at that, that's pretty challenging just because of the green complex and stuff like that.
You know, I want to touch on that a little bit more based on a report that I've already talked about on the show last week. But before I do, there's a couple products that you guys have coming out that I'm excited to talk about with you. I'm not particularly familiar with it, but there's some products in the lineup. Obviously, you did a pretty wonderful thing for me with my custom Recoil 110s, and I do want to get back on that. But big for this year is the pairing with Apex lineup of your Recoil Dart shafts. For those out there who are not particularly familiar with what you can expect from Dart, do you want to lay it out there, kind of give us an idea of what to expect when you put a dart in play?
Yeah, you hit it straight, you know, 200 yard carry with 7 iron, middle of the green. I mean, just like throwing darts, right?
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, just, you know, fall back to when I started the company in 2012. We just launched Recoil. And at the time, it was like a unique product in terms of optimizing hoop stiffness, developing a product that we felt was, you know, competing with anything in the market in terms of the iron category. Fast forward to today where we're launched, you know, Recoil Dart in the marketplace with Apex irons. It's basically a revolutionary product in terms of looking at the hoop stiffness in the butt section and also the tip section. Two different dynamics at play there where the tip needs to be higher hoop, more stable, control launch, control spin, control feel in the butt section of the shaft, optimizing energy transfer. So, you know, the one thing that we didn't want to stray away from was the feel of Recoil. You know, over the years, the feedback we've received from consumers, golfers, over 5 million golf shafts sold worldwide, is that the feel is phenomenal. So we wanted to make sure that we stuck to that route, phenomenal feel, but try to increase the dispersion, try to make it even better than before, which we managed to do the first time around. But with Recoil Dart, I think, you know, it's basically taking that next step and making a product even more stable where the golfer needs it. But at the same time, having it in the 65, 75 weight class classification for those golfers where they can still hit higher shots. I mean, when you look at modern irons, they're launching high, but with no spin at all. So we need to bring some of that spin back so that the golfers can actually control their shots into the green, whether it's a 140-yard carry, 160-yard carry. You know, you want to hit a shot that carries and stop relatively close to where they're carrying it. A lot of times when we do testing, we see it all the time now is that these guys are hitting maybe their 8-iron like 170, 180 yards, but they have no control over it. You know, control is really the key with irons. So that's where I think Recoil Dart comes in and optimizes pretty much everything, the feel, the dispersion, the distance control, and added a little bit extra spin on all the golf shots.
Yeah, I think that is great information. Now, you noted some pretty light shaft profiles, and I think that's awesome. I'm always encouraging guys, especially as you get on in age, to go as light as possible to support that maximum performance from the swing that you're putting on it. My question to you, and maybe this is a little early to be asking, but does recoil dart expand into some of those heavier weights, or is this more of a lighter weight shaft that we can expect moving forward?
No, for sure. It's just like our previous generation product. We're definitely developing heavier weights. Right now in development is going to be 90, 105, and 120. The crux of it really is going to be around 90 and 105. Majority of golfers will fit into that. The reason we came out with the lighter weight products is that we're typically developing products for that mid handicap, high handicap range. And that's where the 65 and 75 falls into. But at the same time, very stable product that pretty much anyone can hit. We not only do testing with the slower swing speed, but we also do testing with higher swing speed, give them the 65, 75 to test for us and provide feedback. Obviously, from a weight standpoint, it's sometimes a little bit too light for them. But from a stability standpoint, that's not a non-issue. So, from that standpoint, we're excited about the 65-75 model, but look for the 90, 105, 120. Probably come in late this year, early next year. More than likely, I'll probably have a set in play at one of these THP events shaft up soon enough. We're almost finished with the 105 and 90 structure where we can start doing player testing and make sure that it fits what we're trying to accomplish. So we'll see those weights coming out soon, and those will be in taper tip discrete length. So that means that, for the better player, 3-iron shaft will fit into 3-iron iron head down all the way to the wedge, and it's going to be a constant weight product. It's going to be good.
Yeah, that's exciting. I have a kind of a weird question, but it's more related to what's that?
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of what I do here. When it comes to weighting, obviously, with graphite and the technology that's improving, graphite is not a heavy material. How hard is it for you to design a shaft, especially when you get into those heavier 110s, 120s, and even attempting 130s? How hard is it to maintain the value of graphite and produce a product that sort of works the same as it would on the other side of the spectrum? Is it just so much material that goes into it? What does it take to get there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, graphite's lighter than, the steel counterpart. So typically, when you have materials, you're trying to get certain weights. Typically, it's more so with like 125-130 gram shaft. The sweet spot for us, we feel like with irons are anywhere from 80 to 100 grams to produce a product that we know is going to perform, the way we want it to. We can design it, manipulate the materials, the design structure to perform differently. So we don't have issues there. It's just when you get to the 120, 130, that becomes a slight issue of getting the right material that's stiff enough for that category, and that's durable enough, and then also retain the feel. That's where the recoil dynamics come into play, where we developed that technology, a decade ago into the butt end of the shaft. So we feel that we can develop 120, 130 gram shaft that's still going to feel just as good as anything else in the marketplace and perform for the best players in the world. Evidence with guys using it in the long irons right now on PGA Tour, LPGA, Japan Tour, and so forth across the globe.
Yeah, I see you having some fun out there. I see some proto hybrid shafts, all kinds of good things going on, flying around. I'm sort of curious, and we talked about the shoe game. We didn't really talk about the club game. What are you playing right now?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an assortment of bag. I mean, it's anywhere from, Callaway driver, TaylorMade driver, Cobra driver, all the way to Mizuno irons. So I have an assortment of product that I play through and play with, and it's fun to play around with. There's a couple of staples in my bag, wedges being one of them. I'm currently playing some Cleveland wedges, and they've been in the bag for a while now. And those, those typically won't get changed out unless, I need new grooves, which I don't play enough golf to worry about. So they last a long time.
Which ones are they? You got to tell me.
The basically the Zipcore.
A Zipcore. Okay. So you're actually a generation newer than I am. I'm so stuck on RTX 4. I can't get them out of the bag.
Yeah, no, I have the, I had the RTX 4 and then I just switched to the Zipcore.
Okay.
So I, you know, it was a seamless transition. Actually, you know, shaping the profile of the new Zipcore remind me of the old, you know, the old 588s, you know, 485s back in the day when Cleveland dominated the wedge game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's a massively storied history there or anything.
No. They've done a good job over the years. And, you know, the new stuff, the last couple of generations have been phenomenal. So, you know, those are the things that kind of are staple, like at least the wedge profile for me. Putters is a rotating carousel. So I have a dozen plus putters that I go through.
I know there's a guy out there who says you can only play a mallet. There's another guy out there named James who says I'm never allowed to play a mallet. What's your story on the putter? What's the shape?
Both.
Depends on the year.
Yeah, I do blade mallets. I do belly. I do long. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I, whatever that day, that week, that month. So it's, I think to me, it's just finding the right shape of mallet and right shape of blade. That fits your eye, and then just go with it, and then fine tune it with loft, lie, and then on course the shaft too as well.
So iron shafts, what's in play?
Recoil 95s. So I play 95 at fours.
Straight in or protos?
Protos. Okay. Right now,
is that just a little firmer tip section? Is that pretty much what golfers can expect out of that?
Yeah, just slightly firmer tip, lower torque. So it's going to be, I would say, just a firmer feel. Mm-hmm. Compared to the standard recoils. I played both actually for a long time. The recoil 95s to me feels better than the prototypes. The prototypes just feels stable. When I test on TrackMan GC Quad, the launch spin, everything is real similar. It's just the feedback from the golfers that is the what dictates where they go into, right? So, you know, fitting is so important. That you know, you can look at the launch monitor numbers, and if you look at the launch monitor numbers, they're identical. Meaning,
really,
95 F4 prototype 95 F4 over the span of fitting with you know single digit handicaps, the launch and spin numbers are almost identical, carry distance almost identical. The feel is what's different. Right? Mm-hmm. So you can put these on robots and hit it all day long. And it's going to tell you the same thing. These are almost identical in terms of that aspect. But when you actually hit it and the feedback you get from a golfer, you're like, ooh, this feels better. This feels more stable. Or I like this feel. I like this feel better. So, you know, golfers will lead you to the right you know, combination. And that's why it's important to hit shots and get feedback from golfers. Otherwise, you can't fit them properly.
I want to expand on that a little bit more because I think there are a lot of people out there that say, well, I'm a steel player. I need something firm. I can't get that out of graphite. And, you know, as you know, I've played the Recoil 110 Protos, and I'm incredibly fond of them. We had a great time at your headquarters actually fitting into them. Yep. I am constantly blown away at how strong they are. That's stable throughout the swing. There is not a lot of love lost on the flex point on a Proto F5, which is what I have in play.
Correct. I mean, it's a weird thing. Like, I don't get it because, you know, even when I started the golf business, you know, drivers, fairways, they were all steel shafts, right? Now you're talking about 125 gram shaft. Also, now you're playing 60, 70 graph for the best players in the world. And guys are swinging 120, 130 miles per hour consistently on PGA Tour that are swinging a 60, 70 gram X-Flex shaft. We can make it stiffer if we wanted to, and we've done that. We have long-term projects in here that we develop, that we make shafts that we've sent out to some of you guys, THP staffers, that, you know, hey, can you test this for us? Where we're like, okay, let's make this a double X or a triple X and, you know, and say, how does this feel? What's the performance like? You know, and we do that on PGA Tour. And so we can make shafts as stiff as we want to because of the availability of materials that are out there. You know, there's aerospace grade material that we utilize that we can incorporate into our R&D products that we put out there So there's, you know, ideas of, hey, how counterbalanced can we make this? How stiff can we make this product? How heavy can we make it without feeling crazy, you know, like 80 gram driver shaft, right? That doesn't, no one really plays that, you know, unless it's counterbalanced, like
right.
You're using a counterbalanced weight. But for the most part, you know, some of these ideas are born from internally, from PGA Tour feedback, from recreational golfer feedback, but also, you know, we had a long drive guy on staff for a long time, and he was like, hey, what if we did this and made it like super, super stiff? I'm like, yeah, we could try that. We can make it lightweight, you know, like our helium model. We had a prototype in 49, you know, X, and we basically, it's just as stiff as our Tour X model that we have for the best players in the world swinging 120 miles per player. So we have that product that we test, you know, just for fun, and we have some usage out there, but you know, there's things that we can do that we can manipulate to make the shaft even stiffer. And, you know, we haven't even reached that threshold. We're currently doing some stuff right now that are like, you know, almost four or five times stiffer than the X models that we have on tour, you know, that we're going to try to test. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. And, you know, is it something that makes sense? You know, when you have, you know, Bryson DeChambeau trying to go crazy out there and, you know, you're seeing more and more players going towards a longer shaft and trying to go stiffer, right? Trying to get that extra distance out there. So it's kind of interesting. So I think, you know, there's a misconception there. I don't know where it comes from, but to put it to rest, I mean, we can make it stiff as possible.
Yeah. I mean, basically rebar. I've got a bit of a story to tell you because you did send me one of your protos last year that was labeled a link. I don't know a ton about it. It had the color blue on it, which obviously you did for me, and thank you. but I've got a buddy who actually does listen to the show, so he'd be pretty mad at me if I didn't say something about it. I put it in his bag, in his F9 driver, and he's like, this is the coolest shaft I've ever swung. I can go as hard as I want and as angrily as I want, and it never makes me feel like the shaft is falling apart. He said, for my game, this is unbelievable. And I said, that's great, because it scares the heck out of me. So it's a nice table. I think what I did here is it was a pretty damn stiff profile that came. But, and it's just cool to see, because I had, I have a link, I actually gave it to a THP, or I had a link gunmetal in F4, just a basic gunmetal. And, we both had hit that and got an idea what to expect, but in the F4, a little bit softer. But then he puts this other one in play, and it's like a totally different world. And that's such a beautiful representation of the ability of graphite to just be super stable or very friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. You know, obviously, when we're trying to make a stiff, we are using, you know, higher modulus material to get the stiffness. And, you know, there's that balance of finding a material that will hold up to the stress of hitting a golf ball in a driver, right? So typically when we're using super high modulus material, we got to reinforce it with other materials just to keep it not from breaking, right? So the good thing about what we do, you know, any good shaft manufacturer will do the testing at our factory, and then we'll do the durability testing first before it even gets to the player's hand. That way we know that when we do testing on PGA Tour, or we do testing with THP, is that the product is going to be, you know, could go to market, you know, as soon as possible, and not worried about durability and structure failure and stuff like that.
Okay. Speaking of link, I've seen a little bit out there about M40X. I don't think there's a ton of information. Do you want to spill the beans, like all of it and everything?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're constantly working on next gen product, and Link Gunmetal Purple was a phenomenal product in terms of the tour usage, the availability, OEM. It was a good profile, you know, gunmetal being a low, purple being more of a mid profile. So, you know, we wanted to take that product to the next generation of, you know, materials. And that's where the M40X comes in. You know, we're always looking at different suppliers to find the combination of right stiffness, right feel. This M40X gives us the ability to make a shaft really stiff, but also the feel is incredible. So, you know, this this generation product over the previous generation product is the same stability, but the feel is out of this world. So we're taking the gunmetal purple profile and adding a different another profile. So basically, we have three different launch profiles. We have the Lincoln 40X white, blue, and red. The white is just a low profile. The blue is more of a mid-low profile, and the red is more of a mid-high, mid-spin profile. So it kind of fits pretty much every golfer on PGA Tour, pretty much every golfer out there in terms of driver fairway shaft, all the way, you know, basically 60, 80 gram range. So got everything we need for that product. Phenomenal testing so far, really on PGA Tour. We just launched it, you know, at Palm Springs, and, you know, slowly seeding it into PGA Tour players back. But look for more for this product, you know, more middle, later into the year, and then probably, you know, OEM program next year, 2022.
That's pretty exciting. And obviously, there are a lot of people out there who followed Helium. They followed Elements and all the different variations. Is Link kind of the future for you guys?
Yeah. I mean, I think that with the Q fiber and the various materials we can incorporate into that particular product, you know, the main thing is finding a right profile and tweaking it to, you know, basically what we're trying to do is fine tune the first generation. This is the second generation. And how do we make it better? And that's from feedback from the best players in the world. That's feedback from our customers, our golfers out there. And then, you know, we're continually evolving and what's the third generation looks like, the fourth generation. So we're always looking at ways to improve the product, whether it's through material, whether it's through design process, you know, incorporating different, you know, tip flags or butt flag or making the middle section stiffer, whatever it is, making it a counterbalance. Those are the things that we look at from a trend standpoint on tour, you know, what's going on out there. You know, obviously guys are trying to build it longer, but with the USGA recent USGA RNA ruling with the 46 inch max length for the driver, you know, this becomes a non-issue for some stuff that we were working on in the future. So, you know, we'll see what happens with what comes out of the comment period, right?
You know, Danny, I'm so glad you commented on the USGA and their recent overstepping I'd love to hear your perspective on that. I feel like from a shaft company, it's a little bit different. I mean, obviously with the Bryson and Phil toying, you had to start considering what it could look like at 48. So reeling that back is probably not the worst thing for you guys from, and you can do this from a personal perspective or from a company perspective, if you want. How did you take that feedback last week? What came to your mind when you read that?
You know, from a personal standpoint, they should have done this a long time ago. It's just bifurcate, you know, just we're already playing two sets of rules anyways. You know, why not give the companies the advantage to make the best product available to the consumer, right? If I'm, you know, Mr. 10 handicap and I hit it basically 210 yards, why can't I hit it 250 with a 48 inch driver or a driver that has a CT that's super high, right? You know, over 300, whatever it might be. You know, we limit the USGA and RNA, basically limiting the OEMs to develop even further. You know, what they're doing right now is spectacular, but let the pros play with whatever they, you know, need to play with. You know, I think the game is healthy. Obviously, we see it. It's been a crazy ride for the last, you know, 8 months plus. But from a standpoint of rules, I mean, I want to play with whatever gives me, you know, how can I hit a 280? How can I hit a 290? How can I hit a 300? You know, when I play with average golfers, they're hitting at 230, 240, 250. You know, it's nothing crazy. And I play in Texas, so that's extremely short elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, have two sets of rules. You know, I think that helps it out. I think limit the stuff what it is right now and just cap it off. Like, okay, there's going to be, you know, the ball is the ball. The length is the length. This is it, right? Set and firm. You can't just go backwards. Like, oh, you know, like the belly putter, for example, or the wedge groove. You know, all that did absolutely nothing to the game. It absolutely did nothing. It just made more confusion.
it was Tiger quite a few years ago who basically said you had your chance and you missed it. And Rory came out and sort of reiterated that last week, saying you cannot go backwards. And I saw some wonderful perspectives online suggesting that is there a worse time in the game of golf to change what exists than right now after the 2020 that golf had? And it's like, how do you go? And I'm going to circle that into a second question for you. Do you think that the tour has a distance issue or golf has a distance issue? Or a third one, is there a distance issue?
The tour definitely, when you're talking about like a couple hundred golfers, and out of the 25 million plus golfers we have here in the United States, right?
Right.
You're talking about, what is that, 0.000, whatever it is, that number, and you're trying to regulate golf through that standard versus the 25 plus million golfers out there, you know, you're looking at it all wrong. You know, you look at the numbers, they should highlight the numbers and the average driving distance depending on handicap, right? You're talking about, you know, guys that are, you know, basically hitting at 200 yards. You're talking about 200 yards on a golf course. The golf courses, when they're playing, you know, if they play a 6,500 yard course, that's way too long for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of a golf course needing to be like 8,000 yards for only a select few, why not just design 30 golf courses for the PGA Tour players only, right? Be done with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't see it. You know, average handicap is still high. Average distance is still low. So, you know, if we want to make the game, you know, more fun, how can we increase distance? How can we make golf, you know, golf more fun for those 25 million golfers versus the 300 plus golfers?
That's more or less the takeaway I had, is because I had so much fun last year and the year before finding the ball that works really well for my game. I mean, you saw it last year. I'm a higher spin guy, but once I put the right ball in my bag, it opens the door to not only playing different clubs, but also using different shafts that are more supportive of my swing, as opposed to just playing gross rebar to try and cut that spin down, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, the idea that they're going to go and mess with my ball and add spin or, you know, distance limit. And I'm not even that is about as greedy as I've ever been talking about the distance insights. My biggest issue is they took the tour data and nothing else, despite the fact that we have groups out there like ShotScope and Arcos and all these different companies that are tracking distances.
Oh, yeah.
And our governing bodies don't even feel like it's appropriate to go and talk to them a little bit about what the normal golfer does. Like, man, that's tough.
Yeah, exactly. And then you look at PGA Tour courses and you look at Colonial, you look at like Hilton Head, these short courses where these guys don't score super low.
Yes.
You know, it's a challenge because you're bringing geometry, you're bringing angles into the game now where you get to, you know, 225 mark. And yeah, sure, maybe you can blast it over the trees, but what advantage do you really gain? So, you know, and then you go to a course that's wide open. These bombers are just going super low. So, you know, there's ways around it, but, you know, trying to take technology out of it where, you know, these guys are training harder, you know, looking at launch monitor data and figuring out how to maximize distance. I mean, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there a distance problem? You could say there's a distance advantage, right?
Sure.
For some guys. But I watch all these young kids grow up now, and these kids are carrying it 300 yards, every single one of them. Whether it's a 5'6" kid that's weigh 140 pounds, they're seeing the launch monitor data and they're figuring out how do I maximize my distance? How do I hit it far? So I think, you know, not only is it size advantage or speed advantage, but it's training advantage too. So PGA Tour is just a misnomer. I mean, you go look at, you know, if you really look at distance, and you can go to, you know, LPGA, and you're looking at those girls now. Look at the top girls. They're bombing it.
Unbelievable. Some of the numbers that are out there right now. And I love it. Good for them.
And they're taking advantage of technology. They're taking advantage of training. It's just the younger generation are understanding this, and they're utilizing it to their advantage. But, you know, back to USGA, RNA, it's just one of those things where from a chef, you know, from a personal side, like I said, it's just it's to a point where it's not needed. You know, look at a PGA of America. They just adopted the ability to use rangefinder, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, at their events, which is, you know, obviously PGA Championship, Ryder Cup, not too many events, you know.
Right.
People get confused between PGA of America and PGA Tour. And also, you know, obviously USGA running US Opens and those type of events. But, yeah, I mean, you got to take advantage of technology. Is the rangefinder going to speed up play? Probably not, honestly. I think it's still going to be the same amount of time because, you know, pros are looking at it differently than we are. You know, we shoot a flag, okay, 140, perfect. Let's just try to hit around 130 to 150. Whereas they're looking at, okay, flag's 140, front is 130, hit it to the right here where it slopes. So, I mean, they have all these different things that they're looking at, just not just the flag.
Mm-hmm. There were, I read a comment on THP the other day that they were excited for the first time that Bryson uses his rangefinder on a 20-foot putt. You think that? I think they limited the non-green play. It's always funny. The tour seems to react really aggressively to just about everything that guy does. And well, I think
that's why I think they limit the driver shaft to 46 inch.
Yeah.
I think he's the culprit of it. And the funny thing is that he never actually, he uses only a 46 inch driver shaft.
Yeah, he tried it. He said he couldn't control it.
Yeah, exactly.
And said, forget it.
Yeah. I mean, he's never put it in play. He's talked about it a lot, right? Oh, I can move this 48 inch. I'm moving this 48 inch. And he never did it. And now it's just like, okay, sorry. You know, it's just like Keegan Bradley winning a major. So let's get rid of the belly putter.
Yeah. Which is, you know, the worst possible thing for how many percentage of older golfers out there who have back issues and need something they can anchor to be able to putt without hurting their back. Like that's such a foolish change. But I mean, it looks no different than the side saddling stuff and all that. Exactly. Like it's just so reactionary. And you've almost got me ranting again, which is beautiful because I had a blast last week and I'm having fun again. So
yeah, I actually used a belly putter for a long time. It, the only reason I used it was because I could actually practice with it. Cause every time I practiced with a short putter, like, you know, it's just my back would, you know, kind of, you could feel it. Right. Whereas the belly, I could just put it in there. It doesn't hurt as much. So I could practice more and I was still a bad putter. So at the end of the day, like this whole thing was like, what? I still make no putts.
So you're talking about practicing. I'm assuming this is pre-children, right? You went back when you had time?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly when I had time. Now with a 7, 5, and 2-year-old, it's no time.
Changes a little bit. Do any of them show interest in the game?
Yeah. Oh, no. My 7, 5-year-old love to go to the range. I'm trying to give them like actually a kid set. But, you know, with COVID, you can't get kid set. It's near impossible.
Future LPGA players right there, I think.
I just want them to enjoy the game. You know, if they happen to be good, great. I personally won't ever coach them. I will take them to the range and like, okay, here's setup. That's it. And they just do whatever they want to do.
Good. I mean, that golf should be fun. I promoted that for a while now. I didn't realize my love for the game until I started actually having fun playing it, which is kind of weird. I think people, and I hope those who listen enjoy these, find enough insight to go out and just enjoy the hell out of the opportunity we have to play it because it's such a cool pastime. It's such a cool experience to go out there. You can play with anyone from any walk of life and it's like that common ground. I mean, that's golf, man. That's like, that kind of defines it, doesn't it?
Yeah. I love that's the best part of golf. It's not the shooting the low score or hitting the ball. It's just spending 4 or 5 hours on a golf course with, you know, other golfers. You know, obviously when I say over 4 hours, people get so mad, but I enjoy
four-ish.
I enjoy being outdoors. I enjoy just talking to people about golf, about what's going on, you know, about the game, about equipment, just talking out there and having fun. And, you know, it's funny, you know, I know people get so mad, like, I want to play in 2.5 hours. I'm like, great, go ahead and play in 2.5 hours, find a place for that, you know, but I enjoy, you know, being out there and actually, you know, getting away for a little bit, you know, so I can play golf in 1.5 hours. I can play golf in 4.5 hours. It doesn't bother me either way. As long as it's, you know, we're not bogged down and, oh my God, pace of play.
Right.
It's like, hey, I'm telling wife I'm gone for like 6 hours. See you later. You know, so I'm taking my time.
So one of the last things I wanted to do with you, I think I'm hoping that people who are listening to the show, maybe some of them aren't, they're still in that steel phase of their life Is there any sort of insight or encouragement or feedback you can give from your perspective that would encourage them to be more supportive of the idea of at least trying graphite in wedges, irons, hybrids, whatever it may be that they're not familiar with?
You know, honestly, the one thing I wish I could do a long-term project on this is the benefits of graphite long-term. You know, the ability to play more rounds, the ability to practice longer, the ability to not have issues. And that's just, to me, a big benefit because as much golf as I want to play, you know, after a round, it's just you're sore, you're aching and stuff like that. Graphite has so many benefits. But at the same time, there's so many different options available now from, you know, 50 grams all the way up to 120, 130 grams. So the notion that you can't play a graphite just because I've played steel shaft forever, it's kind of slowly going away. I mean, you look at PGA Tour, where the proving grounds, the best players in the world, you're starting to see more and more players testing, putting in play, whether it's, you know, the driving iron, 3, 4, 5 irons now, more and more players out there are seeing the benefits of it. The reason I think it's growing is because of launch monitors like TrackMan, GG Quad. What's happening is they're seeing the launch, they're seeing the spin, you know, and they're like, oh, how come it's actually better? Dispersion is better. How come everything is better? And, you know, like I thought steel was supposed to be like this, whatever it is. You know, there are certain players that benefit from steel. But there's no reason a person can switch to graphite and find a right profile, weight, flex profile from either us or even one of our competitors at the end of the day. There's too many good options out there to not take advantage of technology. I mean, at the end of the day, you're playing a, you know, modern driver, modern fairway, modern hybrid. You're taking advantage of technology. And one of the things that I see left behind is the shaft, you know, not going to something that's going to benefit them long-term and benefit them, you know, whether it's hitting it from 160, hitting it tight to a 5 feet and make it birdie, right? You know, obviously you're still going to hit bad shots. That's part of the game. That's part of the game. That's what lessons are for. That's what practice is for, right? But to me, you're doing a disservice by not trying all the different options available to that golfer.
I love it. That's great thoughts. We're at the point of the show, and this has become one of my favorite parts, and you might not have anything for me. You might. I love to see if the person who's on with me has any questions they want to bounce back at me.
What's your obsession with barbecue sauce or McDonald's?
Oh, the Canadian McDonald's.
Yes, exactly. Dude,
it's different. I'm telling you. So I moved down in 2000, so about halfway through my life.
Yeah.
And well, I guess not half. Yeah, close enough. I'm more of a mutt now because I've been here longer. So I guess I'm American. But anyways, the barbecue sauce in Canada has got like a more like a tang to it versus the barbecue sauce in the US, which kind of got like a little bit of a smoky profile to it. And dude, I'll take that tang all day long. I don't know why.
Yeah, but there's are you talking about? Yeah, the McDonald's barbecue has a little tang in it.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you're saying the Canadian one's different than the US?
Yeah, it's totally different.
I find that hard to believe.
I 100%. And I would tell you, as ridiculous as it sounds, I've tested it. And like personally, within days, it's totally different. And their McChickens are different too. And it's incredibly upsetting.
Which is better?
There. Well, there is like a meal. There you get it like you get a Big Mac. Here you get it if you want to spend like $1.20.
Gotcha. So what's your favorite golf course that you've been to now that you've done various events, whether it's, you know, these big events or smaller events, what's your favorite experience and favorite golf course?
That's a killer question. Experience wise, all things told, I'd probably have to give it to Hag Point, being able to take a ferry out, getting your own like house to live or stay in. The golf course being as spectacular as it was an experience unlike anything I'd ever had before. Super grateful to have done that. From a THP event outside of that, probably the conservatory. from a layout and intrigue, I might have been a little bit Villa Crawl the next day, so a little bit hung. But
nothing wrong with that. That's what these events are for.
Right. But it started out really fun. I had a couple great guys in the group with me, and we just enjoyed every aspect of that golf course. It was a cool layout, really scary bunkers, which is fun for me because, you know, hitting away from them is not a big deal. But then getting into them, you're just like, I did this to myself and now I got to deal with it. I don't know. Outside of that, there's been some good ones. Outside of THP events, I'd probably have to say, Valhalla. That was nice. A pretty spectacular experience for me. I kind of felt the hollow grounds there, you know?
That's pretty cool. Places like that.
Yeah. And then probably like the old school, cause I don't like to do one, man. I like to do them all. Like the much older style courses, I'd probably say Scioto here in Columbus.
I had a chance to play that. I haven't played it yet.
You have not?
No, I need to
play. Oh man, it's cool. You basically feel like you're getting caddied by some of the old greats that aren't around anymore. It's just got that hollowed ground feel, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, have a better way to describe it. But what was fun about Valhalla is like you see it on TV. I mean, back in the day when you play in Tiger Woods, you played it in the video game, and now you're playing it in real life. And I happened to go birdie to start, and then kind of choked it. So that was pretty fun. I have a flop lie in the third hole, and my club went right under that grass.
Tough grass, Kentucky.
So grass. Yeah, I'm excited to do more, man. I haven't done enough traveling for golf, and I regret it a lot. But
we're looking forward to the next event here in April, the first Shaft Up. Obviously because of COVID, but you know, just trying to get away. So that's kind of cool. I got one more question for you.
All right, lay it on me.
So obviously, you know, within the forum, you're known as the robot, right? So for testing.
Oh God.
So how much pressure does that put on you when you're like going live? Have you ever done something where, oh crap, I just can't swing today?
No. So and I'll be totally honest with you, man, my iron swing is the best thing about my bag right now. So we did some live stuff recently and I was really confident to go out there and hit irons, and I actually did better than I thought I would. I did not expect to have the kind of performance that I had, which is fun for me, but it's also scary as hell because once you hit that one bad shot, it's like, am I gonna hit a window next? Like what? What's going to happen? So I would say I reined it into the point where if I'm struggling with something, I'm probably not going to go live with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've gotten that really strange moniker. I know Range Days did it. We did the whole iron thing with Recoil 95 Protos, which is super fun. By the way, what a great shaft to do all those irons with. And I got kind of this, they call me the robot of THP or something like that, which is insane. It's so flawed, but
that's a good thing to have.
I'll tell you, I remember coming out to hang out with you at HQ and we did the iron fitting and we got in the car to go to lunch. And I don't remember where we went to lunch, but I do remember you looking back at me and go, why don't you just shoot in the mid 60s every time based on what I just saw?
Yeah, exactly.
And it was so validating for me because I'm like, you know, it's stressful. And I also remember because my hands were sweating because, you know, you get into that situation and I had to use some guy in the office's old nasty glove. Oh, okay. Still washing my hands because they were so gross. So I hope you guys find a better glove sponsorship.
Well, there's no when golfers come, they typically bring their bags and gloves and stuff like that. You know, they come prepared.
Yeah, I did not.
So, you know, obviously the last meal you might have, what's your last meal?
Oh, meal? Man, that's a tough one. Well, am I having it with my son? Because all he eats is Chick-fil-A and steak. No, so
just you. Like if you're at a table, here's your last meal. What do you want? Since it's THP, you know, THP loves their food.
Yeah. I would say like a 30-foot Subway sandwich. And I only say that because it would take me a long freaking time to eat 30 feet of Subway sandwich.
Oh, that's awful.
Well, hey, that extends my life, dude. Why not? No, that's exactly. A terrible answer. I don't know. I've never been like a one meal kind of guy, and I wouldn't say I'm picky, but I have like weird things that I like. Like if you ever talk to JB again or recently, ask him what he thinks about eating a calzone with ranch dipped on it. He'll lose his mind. That's my world.
Weird.
Yeah. Try weird, it. You don't know.
No, sure.
What about you? What's your last meal?
Last meal is going to be anything seafood, whether it's lobster, shrimp, sea bass, anything seafood, just pile it on top of a pasta bowl with marinara sauce, right? So just pretty much anything seafood with marinara.
I'm good. Okay. I love that.
You know, you look at that extreme and then go to my staple food, which is like pho. You know, like a big dish, a bowl of pho. Nothing better than a bowl of pho on a cold day.
I would say I've had my best memories the day after, once again, the foggy evening before. You head to the local buffet and just cram your body with Chinese food, or the American version of Chinese food, until
which is the best kind of Chinese food.
Yeah, by the way. For sure. And you eat it until you just can't even function. And then you go home and nap. That might be it. Just basic, okay, Chinese food might be my final meal, because it's there just a happy place.
Yeah, exactly. Makes you happy. Makes you happy.
Oh, man. Well, I love those questions. Those are different. I'm usually making people scramble, and you seem like you had them ready. So I don't know.
No, that was on the fly right there. So.
All right. Well, hey, let's make a deal. I know the world's crazy right now. We got to play a round of golf sometime soon, and let's make that happen.
Yeah, let's make it happen. We'll broadcast it to THP Rewards.
Yes.
And then you're giving me like five aside, so that's even better.
Wait, I'm giving. Oh, all right. We'll figure it out.
What are you? You're like a plus. I can look your handicap up.
I'm like a January 10. There's like 8 inches of snow outside.
Yeah. Well, I have 3 kids, so, you know.
I have one. He's busy. We got to play some Pokemon later.
Nice. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have any boys. I have 3 girls. Unfortunately, whatever you want to say. So it's, they keep me busy with dolls and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Yeah, dressing dad up. Perfect.
Yeah.
Straight up it is. It seems fair. All right, Danny. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time today. I know everyone in the THP world appreciates you. Nice to get you on the podcast. I hope we can do this again soon. And I just want to give you guys the best of luck here in 2021. I love your product. I love what you guys are doing. And again, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We've had a great 2020 and great start to 2021. And you know, obviously, we're doing all these events upcoming, so hopefully I get to see some THPers in Vegas here in April, and then we'll announce the whole, you know, kind of event schedule moving forward. So looking forward to doing more events and talking about the products, and, you know, I'm on the forum all the time, so if you guys have any questions, feel free to hit me up.
And soon to be on Twitter all the time.
Maybe. Yes.
Hey, if you guys are out there playing golf this weekend, I know I'm not. So have fun for me, enjoy it, and play well. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.